This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 is out now on Exactly Right. New episodes on Mondays. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Babs Gray, and what the fuck do Sun Chips think they're doing in the Munchies mix?
Damn, controversial choice, I think. Of all the things to go after in that mix.
Apparently, this old tweet that I just found, I had.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm Brandy Posey, and dogs might all be genius scientists, but we'd never know because they don't have thumbs to write down their brilliant equations.
I'm Tess Barker, and I'm going to be like Martha and spend my 80s poolside smoking weed and being hot.
Yes. Yes. And this is Lady to Lady.
Can you keep a secret?
Neither can we.
We got Barbara, Brandy, and of course Big Tess. We got a show for everyone that's the fucking best. Come on, baby. It's time to hang out with your favorite ladies. Ladies to Lady, Ladies to Lady.
Welcome to the show, everybody. What is the the Munchies controversy, or the Sun Chips controversy?
I would argue that Sun Chips are an important part of Munchies. Dare I say?
I would consider them a highlight.
I'm not.
I've never been a Sun Chips fan. Hate them.
That's very not our generation.
Maybe because they were marketed as a healthy option. We all know they're not, but.
No.
Maybe I subconsciously rejected them because I don't know, but I've just never liked them. And to me, the Munchies mix is just like all should be junk food and just Sun Chips shouldn't be in there.
See, I don't like the little breads. The circle. That's my least favorite. The little bread circle.
I love the circle as well.
I love the circle.
My least favorite, this is kind of controversial, but I don't really like pretzels.
Oh, okay. That's fine. You don't like pretzels?
Not really.
Well, this sounds great. We can all split a Munchies mix
and have our own. I know. This is perfect.
Yeah, we can split it up.
This is our Golden Girls plan. We'll spend our mornings dividing the snack mix.
I love it. Man, if BuzzFeed was still a thing, this would be a very stupid quiz they could do. Which Munchies piece are you? Yes.
You know, I'm shocked you don't like pretzels in general, though.
Okay. It's not that I don't like them. It's just that they're not enough on their own. So
I agree. I disagree. I'm a fan. If I'm going healthy, that's the healthy choice.
Pretzel. But you know what? Mustard adds like nothing unhealthy, only flavor and moisture.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what? Oh yeah, of course. Well, only flavor and moisture.
Flavored moisture. That's how I refer to all of my beverages.
Oh.
I'm surprised, Babs, that you don't like Sun Chips because I feel like you're one of, when I think of the other people, the other Subway heads out there, you come to mind.
I am definitely a Subway head. And I think maybe that's why I don't like them so much, because I am mad that they're there and they're such a major option.
Oh,
okay. To me, they come part and parcel with the Subway experience.
Yeah. I mostly only fuck with Harvest Cheddar, personally. Yeah. That's my go-to. It's the best one by far.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, when I moved to LA, I drove out here with my grandmother and we ate nothing but Sun Chips for 4 days in the entire drive. So like, to me, they're like a very...
Oh, they're nostalgic.
Yeah, I'm a very nostalgic. Every time I have a Harvest Cheddar chip, I'm just like, ooh, it's like I'm moving to California.
Yeah, you have that vision of you putting your hand out the window and it has a Sun Chip in it when you're riding.
Yeah, it's a Greta Gerwig moment. Yes. This is also like, we really were into the sun in the 90s because we had like sun tea, sun-dried tomatoes, sun-in.
Oh, God, sun-dried tomatoes, the worst food fad of all time.
I don't mind them.
I can't. All right. I already am not a tomato fan. Making it into a raisin, get the fuck out of my face.
Nice. A little olive oil, a little sweet.
All right. Well, these are all fun. Actually, we're 2 weeks away about from our no slumber party. So we're obviously going to have to get some munchies mix. I have already ordered us some surprise treats that I'm not even telling you guys about.
Really?
Yeah, for the sleepover.
Some surprise tasty taste tests?
Yeah, some surprise tasty taste tests. Okay. So
God, I didn't even think about the tasty taste test component.
Yeah, I think if you see something that strikes your fancy that we should try, get it. Because I was just like, yeah, this is something we should try.
Oh, that's an if you exciting see something, assignment. Say something.
Say something. Snack edition. Absolutely.
That's absolutely what we're going to call it.
Yes.
So yes, if you're just tuning in, we're staying up all night. June 25th to 26th, we are staying up all night, noon to noon. And getting up to hijinks. So for Patreon members, you can watch it. And we've had people are excited. People are sending us stuff to the P.O. box. It's going to be a good time. I'm
so excited.
I'm going to be rigging my camera up with my household with cameras, I guess, which we need to figure that out.
We'll figure that, out. That part out. I do have a question, though, in regards to technicalities, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Are we allowing naps if the other two are on watch? No.
Oh, I hadn't even considered.
I thought the idea was we're just staying up.
I'm frankly shocked that you were the one suggesting this. but I was just planning on pulling a 24-hour.
Okay.
But I guess if we are honest, it's probably like a 30 hour because there's a few hours ahead of time. We got to be fully set up the day before and then come in at noon and just, or like 11:30 and get going.
No, it'll be funnier if we don't nap.
That's for us to talk off mic about.
Yeah, it'll be funnier if we don't nap, but you're right. We're going to have to sleep in that morning because, wow. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, then there's no way I will because I'm going to get up early all anxious for doing shit.
Exactly. Second question.
Mm-hmm.
Are we allowed... are we allowed allergy pills that may be considered performance enhancing?
1,000%.
Okay.
It's allergy season. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm taking allergy pills right now anyway.
Okay, great.
Yeah, do whatever you want.
Okay. Caffeine, it's a, whatever. We're going to be drinking a lot of caffeine. Yeah. It's the same difference.
Okay.
I like
because allergy pills make me feel full, I want to say full requiem for a dream.
Yeah. They can really get
there. That's not a good thing.
I know.
There's no point that I was watching Requiem and going, wow, I wish that was me.
We're not hoping to get to Requiem for a Dream levels at this.
Yes. There's no moment where I'm just like, ooh, yes, please. I would love to have my arm cut off while I'm chained to a gurney. That is the level of high I want to be.
Every time my sinuses get that bad, I have a day in the spring where I'm Ellen Burstyn on the subway. And
okay.
I saw somebody tweet recently like, why, of course, like, why would I have a cold when I could take NyQuil instead and feel insane? Because, it does. It's there's a reason why it's, it is what
if we have to have a Saved by the Bell moment with you, Tess, we will have a Saved by the Bell moment with you.
Maybe we should schedule it.
I'm just mostly picturing at like 5 a.m. when I'm like, well, wait, who is our people are going to stay up for this?
That's
like,
the thing. I thought about that as well.
But I do think that people on different time zones will be opening. Yeah, we'll be awake and probably checking in on this at different times. So it's fine. But I just was like imagining those moments when it's like, it will be very inviting to try and take a nap.
Boy, if we do this for two people. So patreon.com/lady2lady.
Oh, dear God. Dear God, please.
And I do want to put out there, our P.O. box is Lady to Lady, P.O. box 412-794, Los Angeles, California, 90041. Send us things to open during the 24-hour thing. We love getting presents. That would be, it's a good clock eater. Let's do it.
Yeah, and email us stuff. If you want to see us do certain stuff on leave a comment on the Patreon, email us at ladytoladycomedy@gmail.com. Maybe we'll all watch a movie together. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I've gotten a prank message as well.
You have?
Yeah, I've gotten a nice little brainstorm moment.
I guess now I'm putting out the call, guys. DM me with prank ideas. The other two have a leg up on me. And I don't know if you think I have some sort of advantage here, but I don't. And I would appreciate some help.
Hell yes.
Yes.
Let's get to our episode. We had so much fun hanging out with our guest today. She is hilarious, and she's written for so many amazing TV shows. Oh, my God. She's written on Transparent, Parks and Recreation, The Simpsons, heard of it, and recently on Pitch Perfect, Bumper in Berlin, and Q-Force. Please enjoy our hang with Megan Amram.
Should we do say The Good Place, too, just because that's so, like...
Oh, yeah, The Good Place. I didn't have that. Yeah. Our guest today is hilarious. She's an amazing writer. She's written for so many great shows, including Parks and Rec, Transparent, The Simpsons, and Good Place. Please enjoy our hang with Megan Amram. Just jump into it. Oh, my God. So excited to have her on the show. Megan Amram. Hi.
Hi. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah. Virtually. Very excited to see you. We were just having a lot of jaw talk before the show. Lots of hot jaw goss. Hot jaw goss.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you all know what that means. Yeah, yes. Gossip. It's beautiful. Gossip, everybody. Instantly. Gossip, I haven't seen these three amazing comedians for a very long time. I was so excited to see everyone. I was excited to catch up. And that meant that within 30 seconds, we started talking about whether or not I needed jaw surgery.
So. It's just injury corner. I feel
like the older we get, and this is kind of, now I see why older people are like always talking about what's wrong. Because like, I think that this is, you know, kind of how it goes.
And when you're in it, it's interesting.
Yeah.
When you're in jaw talk world.
Tell me about your wounds. Absolutely.
I mean, it makes me feel kind of young that I'm still talking about like orthodontia. Like it almost makes me feel like I'm 14 again, which is of course the goal.
Million. Yeah.
That is true. We all want to be 14.
Yeah. Telling Megan before the show I had to have that jaw surgery the aforementioned surgery. When I was like 2021, at that same time, I had just graduated college and I was working as a substitute teacher at Beverly Hills High. And part of that surgery is I had to get like legit braces and it was full never been kissed. Like I regularly got in trouble for being in the teacher's lounge.
Oh. Wait. Did any of the, oh my God, I have so many questions. I'm glad that Jaw Talk came back.
Yes.
Yeah, we couldn't keep, it couldn't be all just off the pod.
On the record, Jaw Talk.
Yeah.
Were you, okay, so the Beverly Hills kids, I imagine, are like so much cooler and more mature than I was in high school. Did any of them make fun of you? I'm scared of them in the hypothetical that
I've
done.
It does scare me too, yeah.
They made fun of the other kids, they did make fun of the other kids.
You were the cool sub.
I was the cool sub. Like, I learned, it was a survival technique I learned, like, day one. I was too young to try to assert any kind of authority, so I was just, like, totally. Yeah. I would be like, this is back when they had iPods, I'd be like, use your iPod. I'm like, if another adult comes in, I'm going to deny that I said that, but, like, yeah.
You were like the wheeling in the TV cart of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Lion King in Spanish if in human form.
No hall pass was denied. cheating went willy-nilly if I was there during a test. It was a real loosey-goosey operation.
Did you guys ever cheat on a test? I think maybe we talked about this.
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, I definitely did. I wrote a cheat sheet at some point in my life.
I think cheating is so cool. I'm like an obsessive rule follower to probably a bad degree. And I once in Spanish accidentally saw someone else's test just because my eyes were wandering. Right. And I think I had already answered that question correctly. But at the end of the test, I went up to my teacher and was like, I have to admit something to you. I accidentally saw someone's test. And he was just like, I get a life, man. You're in seventh grade. Go outside.
You self-narked.
So funny.
Oh, my God.
I self-narked. But I do. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
So I highly, I guess, encourage
Hell
it.
Hell yeah. Well, I was a theater kid and not cool, so I'm glad I did something cool.
Right.
That's cool. There you go.
It's like smoking. It looks good on other people.
Exactly. No one's going to argue with that. It looks cool.
God, what if my current job hears this and fires me for
cheating? I don't know.
My GPA wasn't correct.
Oh, my God.
There was a history teacher when I was in high school, and it was like every single test was multiple choice, And I think something happened like 15 years prior where he had left the answer key open. And through the generations, like the keys to every single test had been passed down to the point that like every kid in the class had the keys. So it was almost, that's the only time I vividly remember cheating, because it was so rampant that it was like you would stick out if you didn't.
Yeah, you had to get it right.
Right.
I see. That's interesting. Cheating has always seemed like extra more work than to just like have absorbed the information.
Oh, like, I totally not. Agree. As from resident cheater babs, we have to listen. I would say my boyfriend Joe is a little bit like a little Bart Simpson-y in a way that I think is really cool because I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
And he did something that I actually ended up writing into an episode of The Simpsons. So Bart canonically does.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
Oh my God. I love this.
But
what a gift.
I'm probably telling this in the incorrect order. That would have been a good twist. But he, in like sixth grade or something, had to memorize the Gettysburg Address, which I also had to at my school. And I just did it because, of course, I thought an authority figure would never tell me something that wasn't useful. So I just memorized it. He at his school printed out hot pink flyers that said cheerleader signups, like cheerleader tryouts, with like, you know, places to put your name. And then in really small font at the bottom was the text of the Gettysburg Address.
Oh my God.
And he just tacked it up on a bulletin board next to his desk and then just read from it. And I was like,
genius.
That is so much smarter.
Smarter. And in terms of like real life skills, like that's a kid that is going places.
Yeah. I agree. I was like, that's that kind of upstart, just problem solving that actually is more important than knowing. I mean, I use the Gettysburg Address 3 times a week.
Daily.
Yeah.
My job. So
when you wash your hands, right?
That is something that you guys are striking for, right? Is to actually add that into the beginning of each workday.
Yes.
Right. It's just if they start taking away how often you have to use the Gettysburg Address, then it stops nowhere. So
Well, the Gettysburg Address actually written by a robot. So
And that's why it's not that funny.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not true artists, okay?
Mm-hmm. This is also a bit that I do. I feel like I do this all the time where I'll be like, Captain Phillips wasn't that funny. Like, pick a very dramatic movie. And I think everyone's really sick of it, but I think it's funny.
I mean, it's great. We haven't heard it, so.
I have definitely caught myself from time to time saying, oh, that's funny to something that's not funny, but I mean that's good. But I'm just so used to calling things funny. And then I'll be like, the funeral was not funny. It was.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I just think this is something I've experienced out on the picket lines, which is like for, you know, going from like year one of the pandemic where no one saw anyone. And then year two, everyone. I didn't really see anyone still, and everyone was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're seeing like dozens and dozens of people that you've met, you know, over however long, all at once. No one makes any sense. And I think we all have to, and everyone is still really socially weird. And I think we all just have to have some grace. So when you say the funeral was funny, meaning it was good, it was a good funeral, I'm like, yes,
of course. Just,
we all have to have a little grace with that. Everyone forgot how to talk.
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah. Well, yeah, tell us about, you know, obviously the WGA is on strike right now and like kind of tell our listeners like the basics of what is going on, why you guys decided to strike and all that.
Of course. And I will just say as a caveat, like, I'm just one person. I'm very involved, but I don't
stand for everything.
Which not would Mrs. be funny WGA. If I was like, just as a caveat, I'm actually exactly right about everything.
I'm representative.
Legally, you should hold me accountable. As a background, I have been a TV writer for over a decade now. I have written primarily in comedy television and have always felt very well represented by the Writers Guild. And the Writers Guild is the organization of like 11,000 writers that represent TV writers, movie writers, and then some like variety and late night and video game writers all across the country. And the short version, and stop me if I'm like rambling or being boring, I forgot how to talk to people. Usually there are negotiations every 3 years with the studios who are represented by an organization called AMPTP that represents like Fox, Disney, Netflix. So all of the networks where you would watch TV or movies, both streaming and just like normal networks. And there always is a push and pull every time these negotiations comes up of the writers want to be compensated for the work. Obviously, I'm biased. And the networks want to pay them less. And in previous years, so the last strike was in 2007, which a lot of people know about because if they were our age, we're all about the same age. I feel like we were watching the shows that were affected by these strikes. And I like vaguely knew about it. And that at the time, you know, there were the idea of like internet television was just sort of forming. Like Hulu had just started, I think. And as the years have gone on and up until right now, there has just been an imbalance. There's like a bunch of different issues. So I want to make sure I like highlight these things. But a really big issue is that writers are not being paid for their episodes on things like Netflix.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They're not getting residuals for anything on streaming services.
Like when the last contract was negotiated, like that was like a way that a lot of TV writers were working was in kind of like on network sitcoms and things like that. Now Netflix and Hulu sort of effectively are in a lot of ways NBC or ABC, but the pay structure is.
Exactly. Yeah. And to just say it too, because I've seen a lot of people from the outside of writing very rightfully, you know, questioning sort of like how much money a writer gets paid, which of course is a fair question when you're talking about this kind of thing. To give like a very quick sort of like intro into the life of a television writer, it's a very unstable job, just at its core. And that might mean that you work very consistently for a few years at a time, and then you don't work at all for a few years. If you're a movie writer, that might mean that you like work for 2 years without being paid on a idea you have, and then you need to get paid in like a lump sum for it. There's a lot of different intricacies about that kind of thing. But, you know, when we are striking to get residuals, which is being paid after an episode you write is basically rerunned. I haven't written in 3 weeks now and I forgot how to say anything. That you I are compensated for that because that might be what your income is for the year. It might be that you don't have a job in a writer's room and need to live off of the residuals of episodes you've already written, which talking to writers from like the old times, which I have been, that's been an amazing part of the strike is you get to meet writers from all different generations. But hearing about the fact that they wrote like one episode of an hour long network show and then they lived off those residuals for years afterwards is at the very least, it's a very different life than we are leading right now. So that's like one big issue is the residuals from streaming.
Yeah, I remember seeing Brittany Nichols, who writes on Abbott Elementary and produces, I think, it too, saying that like the last episode of season two was like huge, huge numbers for Abbott. But it's like, well, Brittany doesn't see, you know, it's like, cool, great. I don't see anything from that, but that's great.
I saw that too, and I thought that was such a great illustration yeah. of the point is like mm-hmm. you are your compensation is in no way different if you write something incredibly popular or if you don't, which, you know, for me, a stupid person, that's exciting in some ways because yeah. I'm not going to be right. No. But I, you know, it really, again, without launching into like all the little details, which we can, it really comes down to that a lot of writers cannot afford to live in the cities that these industries mm-hmm. are based in. Mm-hmm. Like literally cannot live in Los Angeles or New York with the model of pay that they're getting right now. And it doesn't mean that the job is not also a passion job and a privilege. But I think like the main thrust to me is like the writers just want to be paid enough to like have an ability to live their life. Whereas on the other side, the networks are just like, but no, we want the six people at the top of our companies want mm-hmm. like $500 million a year.
Right.
Well, and that's the other thing. It's not that these numbers on streaming services are not resulting in revenue for someone. You know,
yeah. that's a great point.
That yeah. in the old model, they were selling ad space on old episodes of Seinfeld and Roseanne. And you, the writer who were creating part of that IP, that was being monetized in a way that was selling ad space. That same thing is still happening. If you have a hit show on one of these services, someone is making money. So why all of a sudden is the person who made that creative material not being cut into that profit?
Yeah, shareholders became a bigger deal than the people that have actually made the thing. And it's like
totally
well and no, obviously it's like designed that way. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, working in entertainment, it's like obviously I think we're all excited to be here, like it is our passion, and I think that that can get yeah conflated with like, and therefore you should just be grateful for any fucking thing you get, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that has been
yeah
that has been sort of the thrust for a long time. And even I feel like, you know, and I'm sure you have all experienced this too, there's this unspoken idea that you're supposed to do like mm-hmm. free labor in order to like get ahead or get your start in the mm-hmm. industry. And I sort of took that for granted for a long time of like, oh, someone asks you to do multiple drafts of a thing that they're supposed to be paying you for, but they're mm-hmm. not. Like, that's okay. You're just, like, putting in you're working towards a career. But that is unfair. And it mm-hmm. Also just – it starts weeding out people who aren't independently wealthy.
Right, who don't have the resources.
The voices that get to come through become a smaller and smaller pool.
I do – that is, like, a huge aspect of the – economic and just like pay discussion of the Writers Guild is that the people who first fall out when you can't make a living wage getting a start as a writer are the newer voices that just got past the gatekeeping that mm-hmm. was around for like decades. And this isn't really like part of the negotiations, but I believe that, you know, when wages are more fair, it means more different types of people are going to be able to be writers, and then it will inherently make better stuff. Mm-hmm, so yeah. That's like an element of it too. But it really, you know, has come to a head of another big topic of the strike is that there's a lot of probably – you know, people have heard these concepts of like mini rooms mm-hmm. and minimum room sizes have been floating around too. And that really all comes down to, without getting into the weeds of it, the same sort of issue, which is the networks figured out a way to not have to pay writers for more than like 4 weeks at a time, mm-hmm. which a lot of people have likened to like freelance gig economy work, which is like they'd hire four really experienced writers for a month at a time to basically figure out an entire season of television called, like, Breaking the Story of the Season. And then the showrunner would have to go, who is, you know, the person, the executive producer kind of, like, shepherding the show. That person would have to go, like, write everything by themselves. And it's both way too much work for that person and then not enough work for the writers who just got hired for a few weeks.
And also doesn't show those younger writers, like, I've heard a lot of this is that also these are jobs that are taught, you learn under people, and like it's the tradition is like moving up basically. So like they're not getting the experience of what that taking a script from stem to stern is to be able to move up or to know how to do that properly, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah. This person will probably come up a lot, but I was very lucky that one of my first big jobs was writing on Parks and Recreation. And the creator there was this guy, Mike Schur, who's a pretty well-known showrunner. And then he created The Good Place, which I wrote for him on that show too. And through rising through the ranks of his shows and with his mentorship, I went from like a dumbass to at least a dumbass who knows how to like be on set and produce television.
Oh, well, yeah, we're all dumbasses. Again. Let's not.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. That should just be like unspoken. That's at the inherent. End of every, yeah. Or maybe at the beginning of every sentence, you should add as a dumbass.
Everyone with a heartbeat should say that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. Basically, this is a fight, the constant fight between the rich dumbasses and the poor dumbasses. Yes.
Right, yeah. Right. So we should be concentrating on our similarities that we're all dumbasses.
And I think it's that Taylor's old this time thing too, where it's just them trying to squeeze more labor out of people for less money and finding creative ways to do that. And I think it's sort of interesting that the writers have been in a lot of ways like sort of the canary in the cave mine of like what's going to happen like kind of everywhere.
Yeah, like you're absolutely, and it's like you hit on something that has been so present in like my mind, but also the vibe on the picket line is like there is so much solidarity, not just within our guild, but across every guild and across almost every industry. And for exactly like you're saying, you know, we have seen over the past decades, but you know, really ramping up over the last decade, the how capitalism has like started inching towards like oligarchy-ness in this country, and how everyone's labor is being devalued, their humanity is being devalued. And because of specifically the AI conversation of it all, which we can get to, I think that you're exactly right, Tess, which is that the Writers Guild strike is seen as like, okay, this is going to set a precedent for everybody. And I have to say, it's been like so inspiring to me to like, I get very choked up about it because there's people from, you know, IOTC, the Teamsters, the editors, the makeup artists who march with us. There's obviously actors and directors who march with us. But then even I've met like some school teachers and who are union folk who just support that. And I was like, the next time the LA school teachers strike, I was like, I will definitely join their picket line. There's something really exciting about just being like, this thing isn't fair. And there's only so many tools that the like populace has. And one of them is to strike and try to fuck things up. And it feels, as a rule follower, it feels really great.
I didn't even think about that.
And so I would invite any of your listeners of any, like whether or not they're in a guild, they should come hang out with us at the picket line. It's a really fun way also to like fangirl to writers that I've met so many writers that I'm huge fans of. And it's like a chill way to just go up to them. One of the people at my lot is this woman, Akayla Cooper, who wrote Malignant and Megan,
which I am like amazing,
fucking obsessed with. And I was like, I'm going to try to be as casual as I can be to be like, oh my God, crazy. You're at this strike too. That's so weird. I actually know who you are.
Definitely, yeah, because it's not like, you know, we wouldn't all be at a party together. Like, this is like
exactly. A unique time.
It's like a fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw someone on Facebook post that she was at the strike. She was wearing like a Star Trek DS9 hat. And a guy came up to her and was like, oh, cool hat. I wrote 50 episodes of that. She was like, wait, what?
Yes.
You know, it's just like, oh, yeah, it's cool to see the melding because I think. Yeah, the old version of it is just like it was a way to live and, you know, get paid well. And the older writers can like see how screwed over like the newer generation is.
Yeah. And like, and just to acknowledge it, because I think it's also like important to acknowledge the Writers Guild is a guild that has people of incredibly different like places in their career with the, you know, economic strata they inhabit. Like, there's a lot of different ways to be a writer. And something that I do find inspiring is that there are these like mega showrunners or screenwriters or executive producers who like clearly are rich because they've been in the industry for a long time, who are also striking for the, I guess I'd say the, emerging writers in the guild. Like, it really is. Now, of course, that means the strike affects people's lives very differently. And that's
right.
Like, the in the end, none of us want to be doing this. Like, we all like what we do and also like having jobs. And, you know, 11,000 people just voluntarily said, we are no longer going to have jobs because it felt so important.
Yeah.
And I think like narratively that's important because like Deadline and Variety, the trades where you might be reading things, keeping like writers shut down the Tonys because they're mean, I'm paraphrasing. And I was just like, no, we don't want to be doing this. And we didn't shut down these things.
Yeah.
The six very wealthy studio heads who don't want to compromise shut it down.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important narrative distinction.
Whenever it comes to any kind of like, you know, protesting or anything like that, and people are like, you get a job or whatever, which is, you know, it's like, do you think anyone wants to be doing this? Literally no one wants to fucking do this shit. Everyone wants to work and have a good life and like, you know, support their family. That's all anybody fucking wants.
I'm a dumbass. Yeah.
I remember like, that was always kind of, one of my favorite signs at the Women March was always those signs that were like, if Hillary had won, we'd be at brunch right now. And it's like, fucking exactly. None of us want to fucking be here right now. And it's intentionally disruptive. Duh. That's sort of like the modus operandi.
Oh, I have gotten so many people. Also, first of all, I'm going to make a sign that says, if it weren't for you, I'd be at brunch right now. But that also wouldn't be true. I should be working.
With your laptop. You have your
I'd be sleeping under my desk right now.
My friend Max Silvestri, who you guys know, made a very funny sign that was like, my favorite thing is not writing. I can do this forever. I love that. But yeah, it is like, this is not what writers are built for. Also, we walk, you're expected to picket 4 hours a day. And you walk like 10 miles just doing your little loops.
I've been, all the steps. Yeah, yeah. Everyone's getting.
And it's, you know, writers are an inside people. It's a very funny thing to see.
A lot of sunscreen getting past.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I have the weirdest tan. I have a tan on like one strip of my ankles and one strip of my neck right now. But you know what? I'm going to sacrifice it.
Of course. But, SAG better watch out. The writers are all going to have like tans and great butts.
It's going to be hot writer summer.
Hot writer summer.
Their butts are going to be up to their ears.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that there's something kind of amazing in how this is another aspect of the strike that I find interesting. The Writers Guild is a very transparent guild. Mm-hmm. Like, we had meetings with our leadership before the strike negotiations so that they could really hear to see what we wanted, what we care about. Then they had their, you know, 6 weeks of negotiations with the studios, which eventually did not lead to an agreement. We all had to authorize a strike by voting for it. And they then released kind of like what happened in the negotiations. And the thing that is insane is how little the studios at the beginning were willing to bring anything to the table. And a thing that I think has gotten a lot of press, which I don't even think is maybe the most pressing issue right now, but is incredibly important, is this idea about AI writing things. And what the Writers Guild wanted to like codify into law was that you couldn't treat things like ChatGPT as a person, meaning you could hire them. You had to basically define it as a tool, which a human being can use, but that there had to be minimum human requirements to television shows. And the studios were not willing to say, to give any compromise about that. And what they said instead, which I thought was very funny, was instead, how about every year we'll have like a meeting where we talk about AI?
Yeah, I think they said, like, we'll meet every year and talk about technological advancements. And you're like, what?
Like, I mean, what a beautiful consolation prize is that I get to hang out with
you people,
the head of HBO Max. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, that's what everyone
wants, more meaningless meetings. That's exactly
what we. All writers love a meeting where you talk about nothing and you drink a Diet Coke and then you leave and you've wasted your one precious life.
They're really, just like, let's circle back on you begging for financial stability yearly. And then we obviously won't like do shit about it every year.
No, but it like is a sexual perverted thing that we like watching writers beg for their money. Oh, we're so sorry. It's about being a pervert.
Oh, you should have specified.
Right. No, I shouldn't go on a podcast and say the studios are perverts. That would be.
I'm not speaking for the guild.
I'm not speaking for the guild.
Okay, we do have to take a quick break. I am getting a call right now from an undisclosed number. So, a pervert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Lady, I'm Brandy.
I'm Babs.
I'm Tess.
I'm Megan.
Great job.
Yay. I got nervous.
I feel like we really set people up and it becomes like a big deal.
Yeah, we're like, you're in the quartet all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I screamed.
it would be funny to make you the person that's on stage at the improv show. Sorry about that.
Thank you. Let's ask Megan some stupid questions and roll our beautiful baked bean footage theme song.
Oh my God. Is that a Tommy reference?
No, it's no, from a Bush's Baked Beans.
No, it's Bush's Baked Beans with the dog.
Roll that okay,
because you know
what
in the Who's Tommy, have you guys seen that movie, The Who's Tommy, and the Acid Queen song, They Swim in Baked Beans?
Oh, shit.
That might have inspired the commercial potentially. I always love those.
I'm definitely thinking of the dog on acid swimming baked beans. Yeah. All right.
All right, we got a little theme song for you, Megan.
Who, what, where, when? Who, what, where, when? Who, what, where, when? Who, what, where, when? Why?
Now, we have been trying to unionize as jingle writers for our own, for just this podcast.
We are the Uncle Jesse and Uncle Joey.
And the Rippers.
Yeah.
I like the idea that like Brandy and Babs are trying to unionize like against Tess, who's like a old oil baron or whatever. Yeah,
the mustachioed jingle overlord.
I drink your jingle.
Can I tell you guys, I went through a phase last week. I got a milkshake 3 days last week. And I was so fucking stoked every single time.
Good week.
Yeah, it was.
Wait. Okay, first of all, I think that's beautiful. I'm not doing a bit.
No,
the
genuinely.
Fact that you liked it every time. I'm like, it's so easy to not enjoy things. I think that's wonderful. Also, what flavor and where did you get them?
So at the Oinkster, they have a special milkshake right now that's horchata Rice Krispie.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Wow.
So shit. I did that one first. And honestly, that was a so like borderline sexual experience that I couldn't right. stop thinking about it. I lived by the Oinkster. So then I went back the next day for more.
Yeah.
But then I did my standby vanilla malt. Also, they just knock it out of the park there. You don't need the whipped cream. It so good.
You like a white dessert. Like
yeah.
I do. As I've gotten older, I've realized that my favorite flavors are like the light browns.
Really?
Like
like a
brown sugar. Or like a butterscotch.
I like a brown. I'm in that camp too. Browns. But I also like a horchata, like a cinnamony.
Yeah.
Like
vanilla cinnamon.
I do think vanilla is like incorrectly categorized as being sort of like very adroit and like
as being vanilla.
As being vanilla, I think vanilla is like very horny.
I absolutely agree.
Like there are so many notes.
Horchata.
Horchata. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. And then I went back to the horchata one on the third day. And the third time, I sat there alone in the Oinkster thinking to myself, like Daniel Day-Lewis, I drink your milkshake.
I drink my milkshake. I mean, I can't think of a better day.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. I highly recommend.
Perfect.
Guys. Highly recommend. Okay, Manly. Megan. But now it's time to get serious. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. there's no right or wrong answers to these questions.
Okay.
Who do you want to be when you grow up?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm probably going to think they're all great questions. This is the first thing that is popping into my head. But I actually think Jordan Peele has had the greatest career. I'm like an obsessive horror fan. And I think because of the writer's strike, I've been thinking a lot about like, why I got into writing and just being very grateful for my career, but also meeting all these people, which is amazing. And was thinking back of like when I saw Kill Bill Volume 1 as a 14-year-old and was like, I want to be girl Quentin Tarantino. That's like what I wanted to move out here to do and have worked in comedy TV. But my dream really is to like make horror movies. Ooh. And I'll say it publicly so as to wish it into existence. But I was like, Jordan Peele is so impressive. He like made such a funny show, is such a funny actor, and then was like, I'm done with that. And I have this other passion, and then has made some really amazing horror movies. So he was the first person who popped into my head.
That's a great answer. Yeah, I think he's such a good example of someone who just refused to be boxed in the way that this industry wants to box everybody in. Mm-hmm. Like, he kind of just, like, overcame that. And also, like, I'm not a horror person, but I love his movies. Because they're a horror that I think, for me, I'm so squeamish with, like, violence. Are you good with, like, violence, Megan?
I fucking love it. I prefer it. I really like really gory stuff, but I think it's because in my normal life I'm sort of neurotic, but then when I'm seeing it in a movie, it's like a complete, you're just like living vicariously through this thing that can't really hurt you.
Yeah.
I will say another person, and this is sort of just like a plug if anyone likes cool horror movies and female directors. I'm obsessed with this woman, Julia de Cornau, who made a movie called Raw that is a really gross cannibal movie. And then she made this movie, Titan, which is a really also fucked up female horror movie. And she makes like, she's like this really cool, beautiful French woman who like smokes like 4 cigarettes at a time. I saw her talk. She didn't really, but in my head she was. And she makes movies about like how gross it is to have a female body, which I think is really, I mean, gross,
in complicated. An empowered,
yes, in a feminist way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's also really cool. I want to be her when I grow up, too.
Well, I have to 0% doubt that you're going to make a heart.
I saw this. I can tell you this offline. I saw this horror movie at Sundance that I bet you would like, but was really fucked up and involved. I don't know. I can't remember the name of it. I got to go find it. But I don't want to give it away on here, what happened to it. Okay.
The new Evil Dead is supposed to be fucking gnarly.
I saw the new Evil Dead. It's got some good... it's got some good gross involving a cheese grater.
Nope.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to be tactful for Jess.
The paper cuts in Everything Everywhere All at Once were like exactly my threshold.
I actually think that was kind of like more intense than a lot of horror because it's so visceral. You're like, oh no, right. I know what that feels like. I don't know what it feels like to have like a demon eat my pancreas from the inside, but I do know how it feels to get paper cuts in between your fingers.
That's true. I wonder why we all have such a sympathetic reaction to paper cuts, being as like cavemen clearly didn't get them.
That's how true.
I mean, you don't know.
Well,
they got leaf cuts, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. A palm frond can be pretty sharp.
God, it must have been so easy to be a caveman.
Right?
No paper.
Oh, man. Imagine so easy to rent a car, no paperwork. Right.
Imagine the first paper cut, though. Somebody is like, what is this? Witch! And they burn their hand.
Witch leaf! Yeah.
This is why women aren't supposed to read. That's really what it goes back to. It's scary.
That's why they're banning all those books. It's the paper cuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Save our kids.
Okay. Megan, what is the last thing that got on your nerves?
These are such good questions. I feel like everything I'm thinking of is so, this is actually, okay, I don't know if it's interesting, but it is very potent to me. Okay, come on a journey with me. I have, not to brag, a big old garbage can I have to take out once a week so that the garbage people take my garbage. And... yes, I take it out like one of the people. That's what I take it out myself. And then, you know, the garbage truck takes your trash at like 10 in the morning or whatever. And every time the trash has been emptied and I go to move my can back into the little area where it belongs, I look down and there's like 4 bags of dog poop. I don't have a dog. There's someone in my neighborhood who sneak attacks my trash. And let me tell you, there's no reason I should care. It's just trash and the poop is trash.
So they're doing it between the time it's emptied and the time you're putting it back in.
Babs, I don't know if I'm being clear about this. Sometimes that's like 15 minutes later. Uh-oh. And I have wanted to catch this person because there's just something to me to be like, and now there's just like shit in the bottom of my can for the whole week.
It's probably going to get stuck there.
It's going to get stuck there. And it's irrational. It's just a trash can. But I've created this narrative in my head of someone who like lives maybe not even nearby. Maybe they're just coming into town knowing that my trash can's going to be open.
Yeah, it's a drive-by.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who has 2 dogs, 4 bags in 15 minutes is alarming to say the least.
Yes.
That's a lot. I'm like, it makes me think that they're just holding on to them, letting them age, knowing. So I would say I actually don't get annoyed at most things, which I feel happy about. But for some reason, I've really latched on to this. But I'll keep you updated. Maybe I should come on like once a week. And
I think we should do a whole stakeout.
Yeah, trash day is a day count. Well, and I think it's a good, if you have to be annoyed about something, this is a good thing.
Yes. It's great.
You know, everyone's fine. I think you have to have something that annoys you. It may as well be the
dog
shit.
It's very manageable.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like the other thing that annoys me is like the disparity of workers' wages and
you need one in each column.
Production.
I
do think, and this goes back to horror movies, man. I think that part of why I like it is because it really is when you're stresses or like sadnesses about the world are so big, there can be something really nice about just being like, I'm scared of this demon who has a cheese grater. Like, yeah. It's very tangible, mm-hmm. and it's not like I'm worried about whether there'll be enough water or too much water. I'm like, I don't know how that works. Oh,
so it's kind of like those candies that are so spicy you cry?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Okay. That's beautiful. So you're just like funneling it all. Yeah, the candies are so spicy that they cry.
Okay.
So I kind of think maybe even the dog poop is the same thing, where it's like I've put all of my feelings onto this one person that I've created in my head, and it just makes it really mad. It's like the candy that makes you cry.
Yeah.
It's good for me.
That's great. It sounds amazing.
Thanks guys for helping me like figure this out.
I'd like you to leave a note for them, honestly, next time. Like, if you could put a note, be like, hey, dog poop person, I just need you to know I've thought it through and like, thank you.
The note is going to be like, I fucking love it. I know. Give me more. Because it gets me absolutely horny. So please. And then they won't want to do it anymore because they were doing it to.
I would love. Yeah. I want to see you attach this to the inside of the lid so that the trash guy has to see it also.
Yeah. I'm going to draw in my trash can so it looks like a big mouth. And then it's going to say, feed me all that shit. Dirty little bird.
Big horny tongue coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of nagging. It's like positiving somebody.
It's like, ew, no. Mm-hmm.
Wait, now, okay, but do we think it's, I sadly think, I'm thinking this is a woman. I hate to say it.
I think that that's as plausible as that. I will say, I have been mostly on the picket line. It keeps coming back to this because it's all I'm doing all day. But mostly people have been like incredibly supportive and positive who like pass by us. Mm-hmm. But the only people who have kind of been snarky or harassed me lately have been women. Karen.
Yeah, how's that? And what have the hecklers been
the
like?
White women, I apologize. And, yeah.
Yeah, it has only been middle-aged to more elderly white women, which I don't know. I can't deign to say if it's that they think they can talk to like someone like me.
And we're sure it's not just some of the writers' moms being like, I told you this wasn't a career.
Would love that. No, specifically there was I had a special job where I was manning a gate, which we weren't picketing, but I'm just sort of like an observer, literally just like sitting there writing down, you know, things about cars that are going through the gate. And it is very much legal. Like, we are very, very careful to follow rules. And this older woman who was like walking her dog, so not affiliated with the lot, as far as I could tell, came up to me and was like, so you're just spying on people? And I snapped into like incredibly jolly mode and was like, I'm part of the Writers Guild. I'm a neutral observer. Here's what that means. Here's what we're asking, blah, blah, blah. And then she just goes, and you're proud of that? And like a split second too late, I wanted to be like, I'm not proud of anything. That's why I'm a writer. But I did not. I unfortunately had that thing where I thought of it. And as I was about to say it, she had already been walking away.
Oh, shit.
There was also a woman yesterday who was like, okay, I totally support your guys' cause, but it is such a hassle to cross the picket line. And I just...
That's what I mean.
I'm so sorry. That is the point.
Yes.
It's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
It was funny.
Call Mr. Netflix. I would love to know what that first woman's job is. I would love to know what her life
I feel like you should write that response on your next picket sign, and even though it only makes sense to her, when you see her, you can
like shove it in her face. I don't know. She had a really fancy looking little dog, though. So
what size her poop?
I think they're the ones pooping.
Yeah, what size her poop? Does it seem like that dog's
Okay, wait.
We need a drone.
A good point.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that it's a mid-size, a healthy mid-size dog. Oh, okay. I don't think it is a Great Dane, but I also don't think it's like one of those little like Pomeranians. I think it's like probably a Golden Retriever or some such.
Okay, so not matched up with this woman's dog. I don't know. She was doing luckily like a Kaiser Soze past you or something.
Right. Yeah, maybe she's like fucking obsessed with me. And has been for, this has been going on for like a year.
I like that you're in a cold poop war with this lady. It's amazing.
Now you need to get a bigger dog in order to make bigger poops.
Right. Yes.
It's, if only I could, I mean, I don't have like a surveillance system, but maybe that's the next step.
Yeah, so don't go there. And then you're stuck with.
No, I know.
We could herald and mod you. We could paint you into the color of your carport. And so that you can hide there, and just when the moment happens, pop out of the wall.
Yeah. What about the as the trash can?
Amazing. Yeah.
So they go to throw in the trash can, and it's you.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. It's so funny. It's also like, man, come 20 minutes or walk your dog 20 minutes earlier when the can is full, drop it in there, and then it gets taken away.
Yeah.
And then who knows?
I mean, I will say, this isn't what you want to hear, Megan, but again, I do have two dogs. When you're holding a hot, steaming bag of shit, you dispose of that.
You get rid of it as soon as
you can. No, Tess, I have to. I agree with you. Yeah. It's like, again, I hope but that the timing. People who know me think of me as a very reasonable person. I really don't. I can empathize with this fake person we've created in our heads. Like, I definitely, but it just feels like it's, I guess I would say that it's, the timing is weird.
Yeah, the timing is weird. That's where it feels
as someone is, because I was like, yeah, I've thrown away some crazy stuff in people's trash cans. Yeah. I don't even remember.
I've disposed of bodies in them before.
I wouldn't believe the things, at least like a leg. Yeah. But it truly is like.
You know what? I will say this. I'm going to expose kind of this is making me realize I have a bias. For this reason, when people talk about being freegan at any point in their life, it gives me a chill down to my very core because I can't get over. I'm like, you looked for food where there's bags of dog shit.
Mm.
I can't stop thinking about that.
I have like a weird thing where I'm like not a germaphobe. I'm like a germaphile, I guess. Where not really.
Oh no, are you a freegan?
I'm not like looking freegan. Freaking Amram. No, I am not, but I have a thing where I like don't care if food is dirty, which is bad. I'm not saying this pride.
I'm out kind of the same. More like it's not like I want it dirty or something, but I'm not like scared. And then I usually nothing happens because I'm not, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Usually nothing happens. And I think a little part of me thinks it makes me stronger. I ate a burger that was like a foot under the trash, like not under the trash can. It wasn't on the top of the trash. Someone had thrown away a burger and then other trash
this
had gone on
full
top of it.
George Costanza.
And I was like, all I can tell you is that whatever evolutionary protection my body's supposed to have where I'm grossed out by it, I don't have.
I guess I have some follow-up questions. Like, had you eaten anything before this? How hungry were you? Where were you? When was your next meal?
I think it was, okay.
How was it wrapped?
As I remember this, it was in the writer's room of Parks and Recreation. It was in, like, the kitchen. I think, as far as I can remember, it was, like, a really good burger, and I'm always a little hungry. Mm. And so it was, like, I really did want it. I don't think it was wrapped. I think someone just fully threw a burger away. And I was like, that's insane. So me, I'm saying that's insane as I'm like digging through the trash like a raccoon. And historically, I also once ate an Oreo that was stepped on outside of UCB in New York. And I'm fine.
You're gonna live forever from that Oreo. Yeah. Honestly, you're.
But then
scientists should study your gut health. Frankly,
yeah.
I feel so good. I haven't gone that far at all. I feel great.
Yeah, I'm drinking a kombucha like a chump when I should be eating street Oreos from New York City.
You guys need to be gentler with yourself and allow yourself to eat food off the street. That's self-care.
Wow, I was proud of myself for keeping my butter room temp. You guys are way more punk rock than
me. I say that like, I'm like, yeah, and I'm pretty healthy, which I am pretty healthy. But then also, I got a mystery illness in 2012. That they never figured out what it was. They think it may have been West Nile virus. I had a fever for like 12 days and they never figured out what it was. Again, very lucky I was fine. But I'm now putting together that I'm like, I ate a bunch of trash and I was fine. And but then that same year I got a mystery fever. So who is to say?
Not the most like controlled experiment of all time.
I'd love to see this house episode where they go.
Goes back
to the street Oreo.
Lori's like, you ate what?
I mean. Yeah. Okay, we have to take a break. We'll be back with Lady Problems. Hey, everybody. We're back in Lady to Lady. I'm Babs.
I'm Brandy.
I'm Tess.
I'm Megan.
Yay. Okay, obviously, we are the people who should be dispensing advice, if you can't tell from our last.
Gosh,
Oreo.
Yeah, come on.
So we're going to give some advice. It's lady problem time. You can send us a lady problem. Give us a call, 323-6-BUT-30. Email us, ladytoladycomedy@gmail.com.
Lady problems. Lady problems, do you have them? Lady problems, do you have them? People have them.
Hi, I'm having kind of an issue at work where I work in the service industry, a restaurant, a very busy restaurant. Multiple regulars are making me and other young women uncomfortable. I brought it up to my general manager, and she said, of course, we don't want you to be made uncomfortable if he comes in today. A regular, if you don't know, is somebody who comes in often. We will kick him out. The next day, I get to work, and the manager, a male, tells me, oh, we're going to wait for the general manager to talk to him. He comes in and I had spoken about how uncomfortable I had been. He stares at me for the entire shift. I do not interact. I do not engage. I'm not asking for it. Like, he's just staring at me and I don't want to deal with it anymore. So today when I come in, I tell my manager, who's a female, that I am kind of frustrated with the way that it was dealt with. It's really uncomfortable for me. Like, I don't feel heard or seen. And they said, okay, the general manager is going to talk to him. But the problem is that he's not there when the general manager is there. So I asked, I said, when will this happen? When, like, how many shifts am I going to have to be uncomfortable and stared at from the end of a bar where it's not my responsibility. If I am working a service job, I work for tips, and it's my responsibility to make sure you're happy and comfortable where you are. So I don't know. I guess I'm just asking for advice about what you ladies would do. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Oh, I'm so sorry. There's nothing worse than feeling uncomfortable around a man like that, but I mean, it's 10,000 times worse when it's at your job and you can't escape it.
Yeah, no, your employer is breaking the law. Like, this is, like, such a serious situation, and, like, every point of communication with you and any of these employers should come through email now, because they're putting you in a dangerous situation on the job.
I think that's a great I was going to say pitch, piece of advice. I just feel so like sad and angry on behalf of that caller, because it's exactly right, which is that, you know, it starts as someone who makes you uncomfortable at work, mm-hmm. and then you don't know where that person ends, where their desire to make someone uncomfortable ends.
Yeah.
And it does feel like a legal thing that it is. It's not just making someone uncomfortable. Right. It's like endangering them.
Yeah.
Especially because you work around alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And you're mm-hmm. in a situation where this person is drinking alcohol around you. I mean, I'm so pissed off on your behalf right now that you made this situation crystal clear. You did everything right and you were not respected. Your safety was not respected, not just you, but everyone else that you work with. I feel like, yeah, at this point, it may be worth like Googling legal clinics for people that help people in like workplace harassment or like labor situations. Like, to me, the fact that like this has been repeated, no more.
Yeah. No, it's fucking awful. It's like he should have been kicked out immediately. That's it. You never, you know, like.
But also like the caller should not have to leave. Like, yeah. You shouldn't have to leave your job. Yeah. You have a job that you seemingly like, and mm-hmm. There are just very, very basic laws of making someone feel safe at work. So I agree. There must be some sort of like legal person or resource online that knows more about it than I do.
Yeah. I have worked in a bar, and I sort of know, I'm familiar with this culture, and mm-hmm. it does get tricky when it is tip based and there is an expectation that you're friendly to the people hanging out there and drinking, and that can be a very fun part of the job. But to me, that makes it all the more important that your safety is protected, because that is a job where those boundaries are even thinner, kind of.
Yeah, I think so much stuff gets like swept under the rug in service jobs, and people get treated like, oh, that's just how it is, or like, yeah, you're supposed to flirt with them to get a tip or whatever the fuck gross shit, you know, that shouldn't happens. So yeah, I think Tess is right. I think all your communication with them needs to be recorded from now on, you know, whether it's via text or email is preferred, but get it on paper. You said that there's other girls who it's been happened with, so definitely there's strength in numbers. You all need to collectively send this email, write a statement together, whatever it is, like get with each other mm-hmm. and figure out a game plan, whether it's finding a lawyer or whatever the fuck, you know.
I'm just like, so I'm just doing basic like waitress harassment stories, like just trying to like look up legal stuff, and like there is like the expectation of like a safe environment, and they have to take your complaint seriously and take steps to, let's see, under their law, employers must take harassment complaints seriously and take steps to stop the harassment and ensure a safe working environment. If they refuse to act or retaliate, they can be held accountable for monetary damages and other relief. So that definitely is like, you know, everything in writing, find like a labor lawyer, you know, Google around for that in your area to be like, hey, what are my rights here? Like in your own like community.
Yeah. And I think if there's anyone to go above, whether it's the owner of the restaurant or whatever, you know, it needs to go to like the highest possible mm-hmm. thing. And if it, I don't know, you know, and then there's also public shaming. So write it on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yes. Unfortunately, that's like the only thing that gets a response sometimes. So, you know, you could also try that. Yeah. Do a TikTok story about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The leverage of knowing that like whoever your employers are do not want this. They mm-hmm. just don't want this story to be attached to them and to have it be known how they didn't help you. So like, I think that's always
yeah and I think pocket. Just remember mm-hmm. that you are in the right. Like, I know it's really scary mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. approach this kind of stuff and to feel like you're, I don't know, whatever, you know, crossing the line or whatever, but you're not at all. You deserve to feel safe where you work, and you're gonna be you know, it's gonna be okay. Like, you're just gonna have to, it's gonna be shitty for a little bit while you like face them, but it will be okay, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And like, I don't know how you get to and from work, but like, make sure you have like somebody walking mm-hmm. you in and out. Like, I would frankly try to make yourself such a pain in the ass that they have to deal with this, to be like, hey, I'm in the parking lot. Somebody has to come and get me. Okay, yeah, my shift is
also,
over.
Also, I'm
going to
go dumb
out.
And dumber, like, pour some fucking diarrhea medicine in his drink.
Oh. I like that.
Oh. Yeah.
Tell the bar.
That's an,
is the bartender yeah. in your corner? Is the bartender a
yeah,
homie?
I mean, like, if yeah. this guy, if nothing's happening and we need to launch a full assault.
But if that happens, we did not suggest that on this podcast as no. anything more than
purposes.
Entertainment.
Entertainment purposes only yeah, to play, yeah, to play Tom Jones
yeah,
over and
pitching.
Over and over again on yeah. the jukebox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To tie shoelaces together.
Yeah.
Honestly, oh, also, if you have this guy's full name, which I'm sure you do from like credit card receipts or something, look him up yeah. so you know who he is and who his if is he fucking married, like just like have information on him.
Yes,
I
agreed.
Think you know what I mean, just be good to know who he is, you know, and like be like, oh, would Mary be okay with you fucking saying this to me?
I'm so fatigued. That is one group of people
I know
that
I hate
was
it.
Not seemingly affected by the pandemic is creeps. They are no. going strong. They've been consistent.
Yeah. They're on yeah. brand. Their brand has strengthened.
Yeah, well. Right. No, I think this only fed the flames.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
good luck. Creeps. I'm, yeah, just, yeah, I think, yeah, you got this. Fuck these.
Yeah, and if nothing happens, yeah. find a new job, get the fuck out of there. It should. I mean.
Yeah.
But people suck. okay, let's do the
yeah
one more.
Hey, ladies. I've got a lady problem. So I am in the middle of a divorce. It's just going on a ridiculously long time, and I am ready to start dating again. Now, when I met my husband, I was only 20, so the last 7 years, I've just been with this one guy, and I totally missed out on, like, the going out phase and partying and learning how to meet people in an adult environment. Also incredibly socially awkward. I have no idea where to start, but I'm ready. I don't know. Any advice that you could give on how to start dating when you are in your late 20s, early 30s would be much appreciated. Like, how do I meet people? Where do I meet people apart from online? I don't know how to do it. All right. Thank you.
I will say, even though maybe this is not how you want to meet people, which whatever, but people are still going out, you know, at all ages. So like you can definitely find a yeah. group of single gals who are like out hitting the town. Not that that's like always the best way to meet people, but maybe if you're looking to, you know, fuck or whatever, then it could be fun.
Yeah. I'm like this caller emailer is so young. And mm-hmm. I also want to just say like, congratulations. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know the whole story. You were very young. You are theoretically getting out of something that was not worth your time and your worth, and I'm happy for you from afar. And I do think that, like, you know, whether you're trying to meet someone romantic or platonic, I think there's something really fun about, you know, if you have a friend who maybe isn't in the same exact social circle as like all your other friends, I think it's kind of fun sometimes to like go to a party with them. Mm. Like I have mm-hmm. Before the pandemic, I made friends with some people in like a fitness class who didn't do anything that I did, didn't know any of the same people. And I like went to a party with them once, mostly because I just was like, this could be really fun to meet people I never ordinarily yeah. would have interacted with. And I think that that can be like a fun way to expand your social circle and maybe find
totally
love or fuck love or fuck
yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, you kind of say on here when you're looking for friends or, you know, a relationship or whatever, just I think after a breakup it's important to yeah find stuff that you love to do, and that, you know, that is take a class, like sign up for whatever the hell it is, a pottery class, a gym thing, a cooking class, cooking whatever, class. to just have fun, a fucking class.
Just
get out of your comfort zone a little bit. I think it's good to like push your boundaries in that way.
Yes. And like say yes to things that you might not ordinarily.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I've been with Sean forever too, so I don't probably have the most updated advice, but I will say like, there was like a weekend where he was out of town last week for like kind of a while. Like I was home alone for like 3 nights in a row. And then I was like, I just need to be around other people. And I just went to a bar by myself. And I was just going to have like one drink and watch a little bit of the Dodger game. And I ended up like getting people's number. I was just like talking to people. I made all these friends.
I love that.
And I was like, oh, it's like actually so easy to just go out by yourself. And it's actually very easy to meet people.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is with people, especially bars and stuff, like people... They like talking to other people often. You know, it's like they kind of want that community feeling, that feeling of like making a new friendship or whatever. And so who knows? Maybe it's a one night bar friendship. It doesn't really matter. It's like just being social and, you know, meeting new people and stuff.
Yeah. Or if you live in New York or LA or nearby, go to a picket line.
Yeah.
And just find a cute writer.
Hell yeah.
And I will say, like, even though you haven't done a lot of the online dating, it sounds like, I mean, that's where I met my boyfriend. I've been on there a long time. But it's not the worst thing in the world. I think a lot of people do like to meet people in real life, and that's totally fine, you know? But I do think that you have the advantage of it where you kind of know where someone's at a lot of the time as far as, like, what they're looking for. If that is – if you're looking for, you know, a relationship, or if you're looking to just hook up or something like that, it's you know, hopefully if the guy's not a piece of shit, which you need to learn how to read those profiles, but it's kind of nice to be like, oh, they are also single and looking, because that could be awkward in person when you're like, I have zero idea if this what this person status is. You know what I mean? So I always like dating online for that reason, where I was like, all right, at least I know this person's like, this is also kind of what they're looking for.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. You sound fun as hell, like on your call. Like, I think the more you put yourself out there, it's just a muscle that's going to grow over time too. And like, I'm excited for you.
And to not feel like you are super awkward just because you haven't done it. You see, I agree with Brandy. You seem cool as hell. And everyone is a weirdo. And there's no, like, right way to socialize. So I think that what you lost by being in a relationship in your 20s, you probably gained a lot of wisdom and knowledge of like what you want. So you shouldn't feel like you like missed your chance.
No, like you're really just hanging out with people, which you've been doing. That's all it is like you're just meeting different people. I think that's a good way to look at it. And like you might hopefully have a connection with some of them, but you know how to be around people and have fun.
Yeah, totally.
We can tell.
Yeah.
Also, I think there is something fun about just like wearing like a big large black sunglass and being like, I'm divorced at like 27.
Yeah!
It's like, congratulations on having such a romantic backstory already.
You only get to 30. Be French at the beginning and the end.
Exactly.
Have a girl, if you can do a girl's weekend or something too, or just a girl's night, whatever the fuck. You know, do that. Go out with your girls, get drunk, and just like not worry about it.
Hell yeah.
And that's when they find you.
You got this. You sound great.
Yes. Megan, this has been so much fun.
Oh my God. I think I should come on here maybe once.
Yeah, we only do it once a week. So I think we should start anew.
Yes.
Yeah, right. A new Megan. Yeah.
You don't have to record it, but I still want us to pretend. No, you three are the best and amazing. And I'm also like very impressed by your very kind, smart advice. So you really have it all covered.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. So good to see you. And let everyone know, I guess, where they can find you online, or like, what do you want to shout out anything specifically?
Yeah. Any strike funds or like anything about you? Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to shout out, because who cares about the stupid TV shows I make or whatever. I am online. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. But I also just want to shout out all the amazing people at the WGA who are running the strike, who are helping out. And if you truly, if anyone wants to be a part of it physically, if anyone wants to be a part of it online. We appreciate and see all the support. And then hopefully we'll be back soon making stupid TV shows for everybody to enjoy.
That's so. The dream.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
All right, yay. Dumbasses. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
3, 2, 3. 6 but 30.
It's 6 but 30 somewhere.
Hi, ladies. I am just calling in with a response to the beautiful human who was recently diagnosed with herpes. Congratulations. I was diagnosed with herpes about 2 years ago after a really traumatic climbing injury to my genitals. and while I can't recommend that, when I was going through my recent diagnosis, I had, you know, a lot of traumas in that area and was very tender and very sore. And so I started wearing my boyfriend's boxers. And I have to tell you that changed my life and my underwear drawer. And so I would really highly recommend buying yourself some new underwear, specifically some new comfy, cozy, cute boxer briefs. Congratulations. Welcome to adulthood.
What is up, ladies? I am listening to this week's episode. It is currently paused, and you guys are talking about Vanderpump Rules and the Scandoval. And like Tess, I obviously needed to know what the hell was going on when this started. And as a Housewives true fan, I went to Bravo, and rather than watching all 10 seasons of it, they came out with a catch-up guide. And if you go on the Bravo Instagram, it's like a couple key episodes from each season that really like take you through all of the drama. And it literally saved so many hours of my time. It's perfect. I hope this doesn't get out there too late for anybody who's watching the final episode this week. But please, go to the Bravo page and save your time. Love you guys. Bye.
Lady to Lady is produced by Katie Levine. Get tons of bonus content, discounted tickets for live shows, and lots more at patreon.com/ladytolady.
Follow us on Instagram at @lady2ladycomedy and give your input on lady problems and get info about upcoming live shows.
And hey, don't forget to follow our individual accounts on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Babs Gray, Brandazzle, and Testify Barker. Follow Lady to Lady on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen so you don't miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, you can rate and review the show.
Visit exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Lady to Lady merch.